disappear. And you're asking yourself, is this heaven or hell? Like a storm in the night, all emotions alight. And you try to disguise, you feel the fire and ice. Reaching out for your head, you're born in the day. While you try to rebel against heaven and hell. In the moments of strife, in the tightrope of life, and your spirits divide.
We are plugged in. It's Sunday, the 18th of June, 2017. And as usual, everyone there can go to crazfiles.com, crazz.com, and all is up there. Plenty of podcasts, news, videos, links, social media, get it on iTunes, whatever you would like, it's all up there. Also, a YouTube channel as well, which I've been posting on lately, keeping that going. And you can check out opensourcetruth.com, another great website of ours. And also on Crass Files, check out Renegade Tribune. Lots of great stuff going up there as well. Jim West is plugged in. How you going?
Yeah.
Jim.
Yeah, I'm here. Good to be here, Adam.
I was just, how about we start with a ghost story?
Yeah, yeah, I was looking at that a little bit.
Yeah, I was just reading before I came on with you today, and was from the local papers. And interesting for me, because that's where I grew up, and I went to school right there. So, I remember, well, in the mid-80s, the murders, and I remember... actually, there was more murders that aren't mentioned in this article, but I remember the ghost stories and the sightings of the girl in the white on the highway there. And so, article came out today, and it's still going on after all these years. So, for people who are into ghosts, we have a lot of them in Sydney area for sure. But this is exactly where I grew up, and it was a great article from the Manly Daily: the grisly murders, fatal crashes, and ghosts that haunt Sydney's Wakehurst Parkway. I was just there the other day, actually. It's a maybe 17 kilometre beautiful drive, Jim, with lake and woodland and creeks. People could get lost there as well, but pitch black at night. And there has been a lot of murders and things going on there. And I just remember being in school and riding my bike around there and hearing people talking about sightings and weird goings on around this place at night. So an article and documentary has been made on this, particular things going on there. And Deep Creek Reserve is one spot. You don't know what I'm talking about, Jim, but it's really right where I live. And we have a lot of strange occurrences, a dumping of bodies and ghostly apparitions and unexplained supernatural occurrences in this place. Windscreen wipers suddenly cease to work, car doors locking by themselves, radio stations going up and down, of course. Here we have a Oxford Falls pedestrian crossing flashing with a green man at 3 a.m.
I'm going to close the window. Close the window, sorry.
You're right. Interesting, Ardu, if you had a look at this, Jim, yourself. Yeah, just kind of brought back memories of going to school and childhood and stuff like that. Strange hitchhiking people who are probably dead, I don't know. And
you don't live in that area anymore, though, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you
I'm
do?
I'm like
okay,
5 minutes from the turnoff to that place. So, yeah, I'm still in the area that I kind of grew up.
Great.
That's why I'm saying the article came out in the papers today, and I remember all this happening, you know. So it's if people don't believe in this sort of stuff, I remember going back to the mid-80s, and I remember this kind of area. There was a person in my school that got murdered and chopped up and buried. I think it may have been by his brother as well. Not in that so much area, but around the area. And it was pretty interesting to read this. There's stories of a ghostly sort of woman getting into people's cars and terrorizing them in the back seat in the rearview mirror as well, and all this, and wanting them to try and crash. So there was some psychic mediums in there who are saying maybe this girl was killed in the back of a car wreck or something, you know, and that's why she's getting into the back of the cars. But it's the same ghostly white young girl that I remember hearing about all those years ago, back in around 1985 or so, right up there. And it wasn't a place I would go at night. It's pitch black there at night, and quite a long drive when you get into the middle of it, densely forested in parts. So I mean, I wouldn't really be hanging around there, you know, in the car at night. But very interesting story from my childhood as well in this area.
They're definitely interesting stories. That stuff doesn't happen much to me. I mean, I've had some experiences that are amazing, but you know, it's been a long time since I've had any experience that was some amazing coincidence or anything. You know, I've just been dealing with this empirical stuff. You know,
that's right. It is funny. I mean, I moved into my grandparents' huge house. I mean, it was a massive house that they bought a long time ago. When I was a kid, we all grew up there and had a big attic. My grandfather had a painting room. Their rooms were just huge. It's a massive place that was eventually sold, which is sad that it wasn't kept in the family. There's not much we could do, but big place with huge gardens, a very old historic house there. And spooked me a little bit when I was young. Used to stay there at Nana's place at night.
A painting room. You got a painting room there. Is that so you can, like, they can paint pictures?
My grandfather was a painter, and he had this painting room with timber floors. It was very unique. Yeah, he used to have all these easels in there and paints and everything. And then he had his own room, which is huge, and you know, different entrances.
Money?
No, he used to just go and paint around the ocean areas, around the beach and stuff. He was quite good, actually. Yeah, it's definitely paintings in our family. And but after he died, I moved into his bedroom, which was quite big. I think I was about 17. And my parents were going to sell our house, and they said, "You want to move in there?" And I was like, "Yeah," you know. But he was kind of an angry, bitter man, but very grounded. Very grounded, and drank a lot, and he was always good to us kids, but he could be a quite miserable man as well. But I think he was walking around that house for years, and you know, I ended up living there after my nan left as well, and stayed in the house by myself, so I think my friends wanted to go into at night. There were some strange things happening there. And they used to have this red sofa that they would sit down and watch the news every night at 7 p.m. exactly. And I remember having dinner there one night, watching something on there, and something sat in the seat in his chair, because I left the original sofa there. Something sat in that chair next to me for sure. And I got that feeling, you know, on the back of your neck. It's hard to explain. Also, the dogs were very spooked there. I heard the shower on. The smoke alarms would go off. I heard, you know, lights would be on and off. So it was, other people said they heard their names being called and weird things walking around, things like that, creaks and bumps in the night and stuff. So
you didn't have a roommate or a girlfriend or anything there?
No, I was only, you know, barely 18 and when I moved into the house. I lived there for a few years. And and then eventually my dad broke it up and put it into units. So there was, and then it got sold off. But the original house in itself was very big. So, but you know, for a young guy to move in there, it was great. But it was very creepy. And I think it's a feeling that I got. And I think maybe he didn't know he was dead. He did die very quickly into his breakfast. Bang, he was gone. My brothers had to go down there and drag him up the hallway and call the ambulance, you know, and notify them. But
he fell into his oatmeal, huh?
He fell into his breakfast. Boom. Wow. Gone in a second. Yeah. And so
I guess that's the way to go. There was not a lot of previous disease before that happened.
He had diabetes, and he did have a heart attack. But he was in well into his 80s, but he drank a lot. And I remember being little and him coming back and all hours of the night and falling bang onto the floor, stone cold out, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I said he was there for, well, I don't know how long, 50 years or whatever. Maybe he just died so quick and didn't know that he was dead. And that's what I've read in a lot of books and learned about, that maybe he just didn't know and he was still stumbling around there for a few years later, you know?
I want to live to be 100 years old, and I don't want to have any complications whatsoever. I want to be happy and positive, good attitude, and
that's right.
That's what I want.
I know. I've heard about that a lot. You know, you get a lot of people put in retirement homes and stuff when they're still quite young. They could be in their 70s or something, and their bodies have gone. You know, it's it's not a good way to spend that last 10, 15, even 20 years of your life.
Or 30 years.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people, when they hit 50, their health really starts going bad, and their mind starts getting pretty weird, and then they just one disease after another. And they say that the average age is getting higher and higher, but the quality of life, I don't know if it's going to be there, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's hard to say. I mean, a lot of elderly people had a tough life here, you know, with the wars and the Great Depressions and things and what they went through and everything like that. So they drank quite a bit. They had a pretty tough life. Most of them are pretty
at least they didn't have the vaccine, so.
Exactly, that's the thing, you know. I mean, you see some of these oldies, I mean, they...
I wonder how the current generation, the millennials and all that, and Generation X are going to age. I wonder how they're going to age with all these vaccines and ultrasound and all that, you know. And they all love doctors and everything. I just have a very dismal outlook about the future of humanity, you know.
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents were very tough, you know, and both of them. And, you know, they, well, especially him, he drank and smoked and still lived into his mid-80s, was pretty tough, you know. But that's true. Yeah, but I never remember him really being involved with doctors or anything like that. They didn't really like it in those days. They weren't so tied up with that, you know, as they are now. They're so tied up with the doctors. I put a article up on Kras Files the other day, which I think was picked up by John Rappaport and a few others, about Australia, and it was school children now have involuntary weekly doctor visits, drugging without consent. So in the Australian state of Victoria, I'm in New South Wales, Jim, a state program, sponsored program, has kicked in beginning of 2017 this year to mandate that young children as young as 12 should see a doctor in school at least once a week to receive drugs and medical treatment without parental consent.
Well, that passed?
Yes. And this is mainstream media as well.
That is sick.
GPs will consult at 100 Victorian high schools for up to one day a week as part of a $43.8 million program.
Oh.
It's called Doctors in Schools Program.
Wow, and there's no public outcry or
no,
what?
No, the parents don't have any say in it.
And most of them probably think doctors are wonderful anyway.
That's what they do. So they're going to be seeing little Jimmy and your kids at school and don't know what they're going to be giving them. So it was, really quite... I actually was talking about this a while ago, and now it's... Because I was talking about this last year because I was reading that they were going to do it, and now, of course, it's come in. And so it's you can go right to the Victorian government website and see it as well. Victorian government website. So it's all there. It's all in.
Psychiatric drugs.
Yeah,
depressing news.
Yeah. It's psychiatric drugs they're pushing because, of course, all the kids are suicidal.
they're all going to school in a huge Wi-Fi environment.
It's pretty,
causes depression and diseases and.
Well, wow. Here you go, Jim. Teenage girls will get hormone-disrupting, dangerous contraceptive implants or birth control pills without parental consent.
Yeah.
So happening in the United States as well.
That's happening in the United States?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. And that's going to be part of a school program?
Yes. I'm just clicking on the link. Their mother outrage as child gets contraceptive implant at school without permission legally. So that's in the United States. U.S. government and other governments have long history attempting to control reproduction of citizens, sterilizing people, you know, all that. So they're doing it in U.S. schools as well, and that links over there. I've been following this a little bit, but they're, you know, putting $43 million into it. They're not mucking around.
And it's a chemical, pharmaceutical?
Yeah. This is mandated control through government over our children, and the pharmaceutical corporations are lining the pockets of the politicians, in particular our Prime Minister and his wife, who are tied directly to you know, pushing mandatory vaccinations and all this in our schools. You got the main ones here we're looking at is... Novartis and GlaxoSmithKline. Seems to be the big ones in Australia. That are doing this whole...
Russian connection bullshit.
Yeah, hang on. Okay. Just froze on me there. So you were talking about Trump.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that I thought he was going to be our saving path, but... he is being hung out to dry, you know, regarding the whole fake Russian connection and all that stuff, you know, because he was against the pharmaceutical takeover and, you know, he was skeptical of vaccines and all that. But it looks like he didn't want war with Russia, but it looks like he's just like hung up like a scarecrow right now.
Mm.
Politically in trouble, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's a...
He has a lot of power, but he's afraid to use it because he's afraid of the backlash. He's afraid of the political fallout. You know, like he could fire a lot of the people who are running these investigations. Supposedly he has the right to do that, but he's not exercising his executive power because he's afraid of the political complexities that will follow. You know, so it looks like it's largely either pharma or the war machine that is behind all this stuff. You know,
that's so right. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
It won't be. I thought, you know, we'd have a nice, comfortable life over here, and the only country with this big hassle would be Australia. But it looks like you won't be able to move here in order to save yourself.
No, nowhere to go, nowhere to hide.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any groups there that are effectively contradicting this movement in Australia? Aside from you?
There's a lot of us doing independent media, and, you know, I can't see how this is going to be too popular. But, you know, Victoria is a rogue state. It's a criminal police state. You know, they've always been like that. Always. So it only makes sense. But it's been something they've been wanting to do for a while. It just depends on if, you know, the parents, you know, who are paying to put their children in these schools, sit back and don't do anything, you know? If every single parent, you know, went to meetings with the school and went berserk here, then they would back off. But if they're just going to, they're going to take it, you know?
Yeah.
It's incredible that they even would, but, you know,
we're back into the sad state of the average person, you know? The inability to do anything except be a sheep, you know?
I did mention on one of the last shows we did about going through this, because it ties in about the popular painkiller blunting feelings of joy, pleasure, and empathy. Researchers have found, so this is come out and gone all over. And I know John Rappaport put it up as well. He was right onto that, and many others. That was incredible as well. It really incredible. Blunting feelings of joy and pleasure and empathy. Any kind of feeling. So, I mean, are people, if we have a society like this, are people going to care about doctors seeing their kids in school anyway? I mean, I can't see it. But I guess I always suspected this was happening. But to actually see the studies come out.
Well, you know, most of these mass killings or these crazy things where mothers will dump their children into a lake, you know, and crazy things like that. You look into it, and they're always into some kind of pharmaceutical thing. They're always drugged, and it's all legal prescription drugs, you know.
Am I pronouncing that right? Acetaminophen.
Are you talking about Tylenol?
Yeah, commonly found in over-the-counter painkillers.
Yeah.
In studies, people who were given these showed less empathy than those who didn't take the painkiller.
Right.
That's
the whole point of drugs is to cut you off from the world, you know?
That's right. It's always such a common thing, painkillers. They're big in Australia. I mean, you watch TV at night, it's every second ad they're pushing the GlaxoSmithKline, you know, paracetamol and ibuprofen and all these painkillers, you know.
And the government's probably subsidizing those advertisements, you know.
Well, they did get busted. What is the company? Nurofen got in trouble and sued for having too many products that basically do the same thing. The same ingredients but different packaging.
So I guess they didn't pay the government off enough.
They got nailed. They got nailed. It was a big one, too.
Government got mad and decided they wanted a bigger piece of the pie.
Yeah. They did, too.
Yeah.
There's all these, Nurofen headache tablets in Australia. There's bloody hundreds of them. You know, there's Nurofen for your neck pain. There's Nurofen for this pain. There's neck pain for pain in your dick. There's Nurofen pain for pain in your spine. There's breast pain. There's cold pain. There's flu pain. There's this pain. And you go in the supermarket, there's hundreds of packets of this stuff, but it's all the same stuff in there. And so that's what they got done for, you know, which they were getting out of control with that. You know, painkiller is a big, big, big business, and it's not something I ever used. I know my kind of growing up, my parents always had a little bit of aspirin when needed.
Right.
And
that's all I ever had was aspirin.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel really weird when I have ibuprofen. But I don't know. It does work if you're not well or whatever it may be, but I feel quite weird in days after it. But, you know, it's quite unbelievable because I don't know what the stats would be in the US, but, you know, I know so many people use all these types of painkillers. And if there's a link between taking those and losing empathy and feelings of joy and pleasure, then there's an intent behind that, isn't there? I mean,
you're supposed to feel a joy, pleasure. You're also supposed to feel guilty and sad, and you should also feel pretty nervous when you've been taking those pills for quite a while. You know, you should feel like you better get back to reality. You know,
but these medications and stuff, the side effects that these particular side effects that people have, it didn't just happen or fall into it. I mean, it seems like there's an intent behind what's going into them. That they know that that's going to happen to people, you know?
Yeah, and the people know, too, that it's going to happen to them because they don't hide the side effects too much nowadays. It's part of the advertisement, you know? But people want it, you know? They want to take a pill.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jeez. Yeah,
it's just so depressing, you know. It's maybe if I can take a pill, I can finish my book on ultrasound. I don't know, but
yeah, come on. Yeah, come on, Jim. Get on those pills.
I'm totally miserable about it. But it's too bad we all can't be Olympic athletes that are winning gold medals, you know, and having a more exciting life.
That's right.
We wouldn't have to be taking these pills, you know. Evolutionary filters are at work, you know, making I guess most people's lives pretty miserable.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Well, I guess so many millions of people rely on the pills and the especially the painkillers, like coffee, you know, every day. It's just something they take to keep the pain away.
Well, you got everything you want. You can take you can drink or take something, and it'll give you that.
Oh yeah, you know? I think I've told you before, Jim. I've known people and worked with people who have constant headaches and migraines and all this sort of stuff. But one thing I noted with them is that they, you know, working closely with some in particular, is they never seem to drink water. And I always said, have you had, you drink water? And as soon as they get to work, it's the big jug of coffee, and then morning tea, it's the coffee, maybe a smoke or whatever, and their food, and then it's coffee all day. And I say, do you drink water? Because the only thing I ever see you drinking is coffee and Coca-Cola. When they're thirsty, they drink Coke.
Isn't that water? Isn't that water, coffee and Coca-Cola?
Well, it's not the same at all.
It's like 98% water.
It's not the same as having water, though, at all. It dehydrates you.
Well, it is water, though. Mm. I mean, it's almost all water.
They don't drink actual water. When they're thirsty, they drink fizzy drink or pop soda, as you call it. Yeah, they always do. And then they get all these headaches and pains. And there was a book on that called Your Body's Many Cries for Water. It was a doctor who wrote that book read years ago about that, how, you know, most of the suffering people are having and medical ailments are actually because they're thirsty.
Well, maybe they could keep drinking the coffee, but just dilute it more so it's more watery.
I've heard, yeah, I don't know, I've heard it, you need to just have the plain water.
Yeah, for a little contrast, you know.
But, yeah, it's great. But I've also noted a lot of people who have migraines and before they have their coffee. So they say, I've got a coffee migraine or a headache, and they've got to have their coffee.
Well, I think they're getting I think the migraine is actually what do you call it? The cold turkey syndrome from having drunk coffee earlier if you haven't had your coffee, you're going to get a migraine. And so they have to have another coffee in order to get rid of the migraine.
Would this be the same with the pain medication?
Yeah, it's just another drug. You're going to get a headache or you're going to get some kind of cold turkey syndrome. Sooner or later, you got to pay back all that fun and games, you know. So if it's tea, coffee, chocolate, or anything, sooner or later, you're going to have to pay that back. All that energy, all that happiness.
I'm having a 1 liter now of coconut water. That's what I drink a lot of, coconut water.
Are you getting fresh coconuts off your trees there?
Or? No, not at all.
Do you have coconut trees around your area there?
No, North Queensland.
Up
in the tropics, yeah. But most of the coconut water, coconut oil products come from Thailand, the Pacific Islands. I don't know what's happening with the coconut industry in Australia. It seems like a big industry, but it's all coming from over there. But the coconut water is quite addictive. It's nice. It's nice and
it's
hydrating.
Very
popular. Yeah, right, hydrates you. It makes you feel good.
It's very popular here.
You can use some. I buy the coconut oil, and I brush my teeth with that, with a bit of bicarb and essential oil, and I use coconut oil for the baby and for cooking and pretty much everything. I use it for everything. It's not much you can't do with the stuff. It's pretty cool.
Use it just a little bit of it. For when I'm cooking bread, because I cook bread a lot, and like we talked about before, and it is one kind of oil because it's so saturated that it will not stick to the pan, you know. So it's good for just a little bit in the bottom of the bread pan, you know.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, but I always put coconut, shredded coconut, into my smoothies. Although lately I've just not doing that, and I've been putting a chunk of cheese into my smoothies, you know. So
nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a regular fruit smoothie, but I don't always have the yogurt to go in there, you know. It's like grain, fruit, and then yogurt, but I'm not always at the right farmer's market to pick up the yogurt. So I figure I better get some kind of dairy in there. I just take a couple of ounces of cheese and put it, blend it in. And it's a good thing, man. But that's it. Coconut is delicious, but I like it fresh, you know?
Yeah. I do get the coconuts, the drinking coconuts. I guess they are imported, though.
Have you ever been to one of those islands where the islander will take hold a coconut in his left hand, and then take a machete and just like bring it down really fast right on his hand, and it'll split the coconut without chopping his hand.
That's right.
You've seen that?
Yeah.
Well, did they do that? Did they subject you to that trauma?
No, I haven't done that.
They did it to us, man. It was like, for a buck, you get yourself a... They take a coconut and they cut slice it in half right in their hand with a karate chop, using not a karate chop, it's a what do you call those knives, those big long knives?
Oh, like a little
sugar. They cut sugar cane with
them. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like a small machete.
Machete. But it's a big one. They take a big machete They just swing it full force right into their hand, and they split the coconut, and their hand is okay.
Mm.
It's a shocking thing. Makes you want to give them a dollar. Definitely want to give that guy a dollar.
Yeah.
For that coconut.
They earned it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Will you we get great coconut products from Vanuatu and Papua New Guinea being so close here in Australia, so that it's kind of more fresh than maybe what you would get. They come in from the islands, and I like to buy coconut products and oil that are wild and not harvested, you know, like not plantations. So the, you know, in Papua New Guinea and that, the islanders go in their canoes to very remote parts and islands, and they get the coconuts, and then they get the oil, and it's kept cold and transported here quite fast. So you get a really, really good product, to be honest. And
it supports. It's not so refined.
Refined, no. And you find out a lot of little things, like they deodorize a lot of the oil. So these are not deodorized. They support the communities. And there's, they're transported faster than any other oil in the world. Some of the ones I get, particularly one. So it's taken quickly and got to the shops, to the customers quite fast. And, you know, it's raw, and it supports these remote communities who can go and get the coconuts and as well. So, and it's a great product.
It's super popular out here, but, you know, some people claim that it's like too saturated. It's too much of a pure oil, and it doesn't really digest well, and that it clogs your arteries and all that.
No. No.
You think it's okay, right? I think it's palm oil has that reputation.
Yeah, that's
right?
The deadly one, your palm oil. You know, because, you know, we had the rapeseed oil come over to Australia, and they remarketed it, and they knew it was going to be a big market, and they changed the name to canola oil. You know, and that's a toxic GMO.
Canola?
Canola, yeah. It's the only GMO thing we have in Australia, I think, pretty much the main one. But they knew there was a big market for it, and they pushed it as a healthy heart sort of thing and a good cooking oil. But it's ghastly. It's not healthy for you at all.
Well, it used to be made exclusively for the purpose of lubricating ships' propellers and similar things.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
It's a highly poisonous lubricating oil. And then they worked on the hybrid until eventually they lowered the toxic percent. So it's not as poisonous as it was before. And then they renamed it canola because it was developed in Canada. It's like canola, you know, Canadian oil.
Mm.
That's what I read about it.
Yeah.
It's actually, the name is rapeseed. They want to get rid of that and change the name to, you know, for obvious political correctness, they want to change it from rape to canola.
That's right. Yep.
But if you go through China, you'll see signs that says by the road that say rape here,
no.
Which means there's a rapeseed farm here. But people sometimes mistake it and they think they're supposed to rape somebody, you know.
That's right. Come and get raped.
This is the official government rape zone, you know.
It's a terrible product but
right. They sold it as a health food oil.
They have, well, it's in everything. It's you got to be careful in Australia because, you know, they put it in everything that you buy, you know.
It's everything. It's supposed to be a health oil. I don't know why why do they use that oil like that when they could use healthy oils?
You know?
Is it really that cheap? That much cheaper? Is it like, you know?
I think
Or do they just enjoy making everybody sick because they know it's going to pay out later on?
We have in Australia some of the best olive oil in the world. I mean, olives grow wild here, for God's sake. So we have a lot of olive oil now, extra virgin, organic, cold-pressed olive oil, and that's all I really use. But, you know, I don't know why people eat margarine and canola oil. And, you know, I mean, I can't imagine eating margarine. It's... I did talk about that on an older podcast, Jim, because I was reading an article in Time magazine. I know you're probably going to laugh, but it was about about fat and butter and stuff, how it's been demonized. So the article itself was okay, but the man who wrote the article was an American, and he was saying in the article how he remembers, you might know a bit more about it, but the what government it was, maybe in the 70s, in the early 70s, they brought in a new sort of way of eating. That's when you got all the microwaves come in and the TV dinners, and the margarine companies and the oil companies were starting to monopolize, I guess, and they started to demonize butter and healthy fats and eggs and stuff like that. And then he remembers being a kid and everything being nuked in the microwave, all the TV dinners, and how the diet changed, and how the health of his family and everyone around him changed as well. And, you know, they were doing that as well here, demonizing all of the good fatty, you know, saturated animal-based foods, and pushing margarine and canola and all this stuff on the population. So it's definitely an experiment. And then after that, you got all the statin drugs coming out, you know, statin and all those kind of drugs, and all these heart-friendly special margarines to lower your cholesterol. So the surgeons and the doctors and the medical mafia cashed in on all the heart attacks and cholesterol problems with all the new statin drugs and all this. So it was all perfectly planned, you know.
Yeah, I think the demonizing of fats is definitely a crazy thing, but not necessarily because they did it, but because of the reason they did it. I think they were doing it for one thing. They could sell the fat back to the animals and just cycle it back and feed the animals, but I think saying that it was bad for the reasons they were saying it is the wrong reason. That I think the hidden agenda was that if people eat fatty foods like they did before, they would be more poisoned by DDT and those chemicals, because it's to the fats where the pesticides gravitate. So they're trying to make the effect of pesticides less obvious by getting people off of fatty foods, you know.
God, well, you have to go organic.
Well, yeah. Although sometimes I wonder about organic, like when it comes from the big chains.
Yeah, real organic. Yeah, local farms, because, small stuff. Yeah,
small farm stuff. Yeah. Because a lot of the organic food is organic because the farms are so poisoned that they have to go organic because they can't grow anything else.
That's right.
You know, and so it's a catch-22. So the small farm is where you know what's happening is really great. And I'm lucky enough now, I've finally located some farms in New York. I used to think of going to a farmer's market, I could eat anything organic, but now I realize that certain states have a lot of fracking going on in there. So New York State doesn't have any fracking. It's not allowed. So I've been just trying to limit my food to New York State grown food, or Maine or Vermont, which are the healthy states in the area.
That's
so it's
right.
Really tricky. It's really tricky trying to be healthy. You know, it's always a scam around the corner.
Oh yeah, we got that here. There was a politician on a beautiful river here, and he set it on fire. You know,
he was out there. River?
Yeah, like a stream river, like a pretty big one. Yeah, he was out there on his little boat and had a lighter and lit the water, and it poosh went up. You know, because of the fracking and all of it split under there. Yeah, showing the problems that they're causing up there. I think it was in Queensland, yeah, showing the problems that they're denying. And he's like, look at this, and he lit it.
And he lived to tell the story?
Yeah, it went up pretty. I'll see if I can dig that video up. I'll send it to you. It poofs. You see him jump back, you know? Bang.
And they're saying it's just a natural phenomenon,
I guess. Fracking here, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Australian government's one of those governments that would love to get all the national parks reversed and all the World Heritage areas delisted through the United Nations, so they can burn it all and frack it all, set it on fire, you know. you know, they originally wanted to burn Tasmania's old-growth forests, which are probably the biggest forests on Earth outside the Californian redwoods. absolutely immense forest giants down there, incredible, from Gondwana, when Australia was, of course, part of South America, you know, the supercontinent. These forests are, there's nothing like this in planet Earth, as far as I'm concerned. You have to go to Tasmania to see it, you know. They've been cutting and burning this stuff for years, just trashing it, and they lay all this 1080 bait, which is banned in the United States, and banned in many countries. It's a bait poison that they put down after they've burned all the forest down, and they replant fast growing pine or things that they can sell off later, you know, and all the native animals eat it and die a horrible death. What I've heard, 1080 bait is fluoride. It's so the government down there had this great idea to burn Tasmania's forest to create electricity, and that's where the environmental activism group started in Tasmania on the Franklin River, I think it was. You know, they were going to dam those beautiful wild rivers in Tasmania. There's national parks in Tasmania, Jim, that haven't been touched since the last ice age. It's a very extreme, remote place. There's snow and ice and forests. It's mountainous. It's different from Australia. But that's where the activists sort of came in, and tying themselves to the trucks, you know, lying down in front of the bulldozers. That's where it all started there, the kind of angry or activism that got violent at times and stuff like that. They've been battling ever since with this Tasmanian government, who seem intent on burning all the trees there. So they've managed to save most of it, which is good. But it's, the Australian government are like that, and fracking is such a deadly, terrible thing, you know. You wonder what it's doing to all the groundwater and everything, you know, as well. The poisoning occurring.
In Arizona, in the mountains area not far from Tucson, Arizona, back in the 1900s, there are forests, which today are deserts, because they would set up a steel processing plant there, and then they would pay the Indians and anybody, pennies per pound to bring wood in. So everybody would bring wood in, and it was like the buffalo. You know, the buffalo disappeared because they put a price on their hide. So they put a price on wood in order to burn in these steel processing plants, and whole forest regions became just desert regions permanently. They just, because every scrap of wood would end up in these furnaces, you know. So I can see that's what they've tried to do with the Tasmanian forest. They want to make electricity by burning the forest, you know.
They'll never do it. Never do it. There's just too many people against it, so.
Oh, good.
Managed to kick out a company called Guns that were like a logging company, just trashing it down there, and finally got rid of them. So I was interested as well in the Tasmanian devil, you know, this animal.
Yeah, well, is it possible to get these organizations that have successfully done something environmental into the anti-vaccine thinking?
God knows. I mean, this particular company was ghastly. I mean, they just...
Right.
But the Tasmanian devil, that animal in Tasmania, it has this... facial tumor disease that's almost wiped them out of the wild completely. I don't know if it's a viral thing.
What is it called?
The Tasmanian devil. It's a marsupial animal in Australia, a black one.
Yeah, but you said there was a disease.
It's got a disease for a long time now, yeah, and it's almost pretty much wiped them out. It's a facial cancer tumor thing, and it spreads all across their face. And I was wondering if this was an environmental toxicity issue, you know, what the logging companies were doing and the stuff, the baiting they're doing and stuff like that, that's disrupted the environment down there. It's pretty terrible. They're desperately trying to save these creatures. They're a wonderful animal.
I think a lot of these diseases of wild animals are just a way of covering up what are basically symptoms of pollution, you know.
That's what I always thought, yeah.
Yeah, blaming it on a virus, you know, like rabies. Rabies originated when they began to do the widespread agricultural application of arsenic, when that first happened.
Yeah.
And So I'm pretty sure it was just arsenic and lead. When they started throwing that everywhere, that the animals were starting to get poisoned. So they created this dramatic rabies paradigm as a misinformation thing. So the Tasmanian devils are just probably sensitive to all the crazy poison that's going on. And they don't want people to see that, you know, or think about it. They just want them to see it as a infectious disease.
That's right. Well,
but I'm looking it up right now on the web.
I sent you a link here. They're saying that, you know, they haven't noted any other spreading of it to other animals. And saying, yeah, it's pretty ghastly. It's terrible to look at these poor creatures. It starts around their mouth and they get infected and they get all these cancers all over their face and they die a terrible death.
Yeah, well, what they should do is they should say, okay, these are the miner's canaries. Let's investigate where they're getting poisoned and track down the source of the poisoning, and then we'll protect humans as well as the Tasmanian devils. But they're going to look at it as a threat to industry, and they will try to demonize the virus or whatever.
Mm.
It's the same old story, you know.
Well, they killed all of the Tasmanian tigers down there. Got rid of all of them. But of course, they're saying here, could the devil facial tumors be caused by accumulation of exposure to UV rays radiating through our ozone-depleted skies?
Well, that's another way of looking at it, but, you know, it's I guess it's possible, right? But they have hair. Mm. This is like they're hairy creatures. It's not like the UV is going to have an easy access to their face, you know?
No. Yeah.
You know, they're not like human beings.
It just seems to be something that's baffled them, and, you know, as time runs out and they desperately try to save them, I know they're going to introduce them to the mainland.
They're always baffled. They're always baffled because that's their job, is to be baffled. Disease is always a mystery. Well,
an ancient animal like that gets a tumors on the face like that, you know, you have to first look at the, you know, toxicity, don't you, in the environment? What's going on there? You know, that
if it's on there, you know? are they a burrowing animal?
I think
they like to burrow.
So
they're probably burrowing into garbage areas and burrowing into all kinds of things. Mm. The industry likes to dump into the ground. That's its tradition. So if they start burrowing in the same place where the dumping is, they're going to have cancer, you know.
Mm. And they're meat eaters as well, so they'll take prey and rip it to pieces, you know. All sorts of other animals,
right.
They'll eat those.
And a lot of the little rodents are going to be near the garbage zones, so they would want to go in the same zone and try and catch these little rodents, you know.
Yeah, houses or urban areas, really.
Right.
You might hear them camping. They scream when they're eating, you know, scream out. That's really.
Right.
You might hear them camping. They scream when they're eating, you know, scream out. That's pretty.
Yeah.
It's a great sound. I've heard that before.
Industry has a clever way of finding its way into the most remote areas.
That's right.
Like a methyl tertiary butyl ether. MTBE is a widespread poisoning of the gasoline supplies, right? And supposedly that is all over Canada, in all the rivers, and all the little streams, no matter how far you go out. And people tell stories about, well, you know, my dog and I, we went camping over the weekend, and my dog, like, got sick and died. You know, how could that be possible? I'm way out in the middle of nowhere. But you look at a map of MTBE and you see all these rivers are poisoned like hell, you know, the remote rivers, you know. You poison it upstream and then it goes downstream everywhere, you know.
What were they poisoning that with? Did you say?
MTBE is like a massive poisoning that nobody knows about. It's like, but they added it to the gasoline supplies because it's a waste product, but it's burnable. And they wanted to use the gasoline system, the refinery system, as sort of like a big trash can. You know, they use refineries as a way of disposing of trash, you know, industrial trash. You know, metal refineries and petrochemical refineries. They can pour industrial waste into there, you know, and then it ends up in the air, and then it ends up in the water directly through leaks. When the tanks leak, like all the gasoline tanks in the United States, are the underground tanks that are at the gas stations, they all leak, and they all have MTB in them, and they create plumes all over the place. The ground is like totally poisoned, and then the air is totally poisoned. I wrote a huge research on this years, and it actually got published by ABC News. They actually did a big write-up on my research on the widespread poisoning by MTB and gasoline. There's a political movement about it, against it, but nobody knows about it, you know. And it climaxed. The poisoning of the gasoline supply kept getting higher and higher until the birds around the New York City area began to fall out of the trees. And the squirrels began to fall out of the trees during 1997, 1998, and 1999, when finally they banned MTBE. The EPA banned it after about 25 years of MTBE poisoning in the gasoline supply. And but the thing is, coincidental with their ban was the West Nile virus epidemic. You know the West Nile virus epidemic? It said when all the crows died, all the black crows died.
That's right.
It was just a massive air poisoning. And I did 20 megabytes of research, and Nicholas Ragush ABC News called me up, and we spent about 6 months getting it together so they could publish it. They published it, and he said it was like one of the most successful stories he'd ever written. They got a lot of hits. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's out there on the web, you know.
I'll have to dig it up.
It's like year 2000 is when we did this. The whole thing started in 1999. They put, instead of admitting that they were poisoning the air through the gasoline supply, the city just declared a war on a mosquito, claiming the mosquito carried a virus, and that the virus is causing the birds to die. You know, it was like a bullshit thing, a typical medical bullshit, because medicine protects industry when it comes to the environment.
That's right. You know?
So all kind of animals were dying all over the place, and humans started dying. That's when they banned it, when the humans started dying noticeably. And they were always dying, but when it became so obvious, they just declared this bullshit epidemic, brought in the CDC with their big uniforms, their hazmat uniforms, and they had helicopters flying all over the place here, spraying pesticides. It was a big cover-up, big fakey cover-up, you know.
That's right. It's, I was going to... There it is there. I was just going to... I got that other story that I sent you as well, because I wanted your opinion on this. We went over it on last week's podcast a couple of nights ago about the weather manipulation and all of this, but it was the asthma storm in Melbourne, Australia, if you remember that, and I sent you a bit of stuff, dropped people like flies. And I got this from the Daily Sheeple. It says, they're saying, is this biowarfare? And they're saying it was like 150 bombs going off. Six people died, from what we know. 8,500 people were hospitalized in Australia due to a rare asthma thunderstorm. That's what the authorities call it.
They call it an asthma thunderstorm
hit Melbourne, and a guy that I spoke to that night, he tracks storms and everything, and it was he claims they're letting off these chem bombs out in the ocean. They come through, and he warned people before this happened to stay inside or wear a mask, and it came through and pretty much choked people down. And
well, you know there is a phenomena like just before a storm, a lot of people will get sick, and they believe it's like a talent. Like they can, they think it's their sensitivity to storms, right? They can actually predict there's going to be a storm because they will get sick, you know. But I think what's happening is that when a storm is approaching, the interesting thing would be to know, investigate this whole thing. When a storm is approaching, there's a change in air pressure from high to low air pressure, or vice versa, right? And there's also, like, rain will start coming vertically downward, creating a downward wind, which drags all the pollution that's floating in a strata. There's a ton of pollution, usually in the air, coming off the stack plants, and it's built up in the sky, and that's how you get acid rain, right? The rain comes down, and it drags this pollution straight down. It creates a downward vertical rain. It creates a downward vertical wind that brings down the pollution, along with, you know, and if you have the change of air pressure, it's going to funnel that high pollution down to the ground level. And I think that might account for why people get sick before a thunderstorm, you know. And asthma would be right along with that, you know. I imagine if you look at the area where these epidemics are happening, this would be a good little study. And then you do a industry map of polluting industries. I think you're going to find something upwind, you know. You're going to find something happening. Massive air pollution.
I think it's, I don't know if it's ever been seen before. It was pretty incredible. It caused a almost deadly illness in people. They were saying that people were calling an ambulance every 4.5 seconds. It was like 150 bombs going off. Now, this on the show we covered the other night.
Now this is around Melbourne. This is around Melbourne.
Yeah. And a lady was sick, but my guest claimed that she was tested positive for Agent Orange.
Now, when did this happen? This thing. This thunderstorm.
I'll get the date in a sec. It was probably a month ago or so.
Because a month ago, I'm seeing that there's a big health warning for Melbourne residents as air pollution lingers. So Melbourne had an industrial air pollution event going on when these people are having asthma, and they're blaming it on a thunderstorm.
Well, here's the official story is, from the officials, is that pollen grains from ryegrass fields surrounding Melbourne, huge ryegrass fields surrounding Melbourne, were blown across the city just before a sudden downpour. Once the rain hit, the pollen grains absorbed the moisture and burst in the air, releasing thousands of much smaller allergen nanoparticles that were inhaled and became trapped in people's lungs.
It has to be true because they used the word nanoparticle.
That's right. Once the rain stopped, thousands of people began suffering asthma symptoms all at once, everything from breathing issues to cardiac problems. Some people suffered heart attacks. Six people have died so far. One girl died in her family's arms on the front lawn after waiting more than half an hour for an ambulance because they just ran out. They didn't have any more ambulance. The thing is,
this is all being blamed on pollen.
That's right. That's right.
Which has got to be bullshit because pollen, we have evolved with pollen for like a billion years, you know? And
why now?
You know, why is suddenly in Melbourne pollen? Oh, it's because they're nanoparticles. That's why.
My guest the other night, Jim, he's very fascinated in your work as well, Robert Deutsch. He was on, he studies all this, but he claimed a lady, because they have a small clinic that they research all of this. She got very ill. She was there, and they claim that she was tested and for that this He claimed it was Agent Orange.
Okay.
I didn't know what to say to that.
I think
what
Agent
she tested for.
And they found it? They found it positive?
Yes, she
for
was
Agent
tested
Orange?
Positive for Agent Orange after she got sick from that storm, whatever it was.
But I think Agent Orange is also a industrial pollutant. It's not like just only for the purposes of...
Well, what I was going to ask you is, if we're looking at huge farms and ryegrass fields all around Melbourne, are we looking at these massive amounts of Monsanto chemicals, maybe, or sprays they're putting on there that was whipped up? And I mean, was it a are they testing something on people? We can't really know for sure, but
well, if it's related to a thunderstorm, then it's got to be air pollution.
It was almost like a huge dust storm thing.
Well, that's what they're trying to...
But they're growing all this stuff there. They're growing all around Melbourne. They're growing all this, all these crops. I'm just wondering, with all... they're massive. I mean, you're talking massive
maybe,
areas.
You're saying like maybe it's poison crops, you know?
That's just what I was thinking. Ryegrass fields. But, I mean, these are... You have to understand how big Australia is. I mean, you're looking at areas probably the size of European countries. I mean, you're looking at massive, massive... plains of this stuff growing, rye and wheat or whatever they're growing. They're obviously spraying on it more than they ever did before. I mean, obviously our food's sprayed more with chemicals than it ever was before in history. But it's kind of a freak event as well. Yeah. And if she's tested for Agent Orange, that's similar to Roundup and the stuff Monsanto use on the crops, isn't it? Is it similar? Will it come out similar in testing, or... If you were poisoned?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I think it has a... I think there's a there are chemicals that are could test positive for Agent Orange that are like Agent Orange, that are going to be found in a lot of chemical processes. It's, you know.
It's a hard thing, Jim, because we suffer bad asthma in Australia and allergies. I do myself. A lot of people do.
Okay.
And people here that got so sick had never had asthma in their life, and they said it was like a hand coming down out of the sky and choking them. You know, people said it felt like someone was stamping on their chest and crushing their chest.
Well, I think that sounds just like any poisoning.
That's right. You know? That's what I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it. It was on 60 Minutes on Channel 9, and they were saying it's going to happen again. Yeah. They didn't get to the bottom of it. I think it was just propaganda. But here you have the official story saying that it's the what I read out before. The pollen grains absorbing the moisture in the air and bursting, and the nano particles, particulates. So, well,
I'm seeing that it does have a very low air pollution index, you know, and I mean, it would be interesting to get the exact location of where this stuff happened.
I will send you the last podcast we did, because Robert, he does live Facebook feeds of weather events from the government weather websites, and he shows it all, and it's very, very strange. I mean, he showed it coming, and he warns people, but he shows he zooms in, Jim, and he shows these clusters exploding, going off and going onto the mainland there. So he calls them like kind of chem bombs, not chemtrails they're doing anymore. They're exploding these chemical type bombs, and it's going on like a fog onto the mainland. And people said that after he did the address. They said that it was a nice day in Melbourne, and then this stuff came, and they... People say I was so allergic and my throat and eyes were burning. I was coughing and all of this stuff, which is and it sounds like a chemical type attack. So, I'm wondering what was done here, and was this some type of test?
When was this?
Melbourne, you know.
When did you have that?
I did this podcast the other night with Robert, because he follows this more than anybody, and he actually put out a warning to the people of Melbourne. He followed that storm. He followed this from the beginning, and he tracked it, and he warned everybody, and then they copped it, and so they knew he wasn't kidding. But it's interesting to see these these weather things that he does, you know, in all sorts of parts of the world. He tracks lots of things, these strange beams, blue beams and things going off, and strange things causing, triggering weather events and stuff like that. But this was unprecedented. I mean, it was very, very horrible and strange to be in Australia and watch, you know, a city of people just get choked off like this, you know. And I think to myself, was this some type of weather weapon that was used, or was it some type of phenomenon where it just everything connected like a perfect storm? And it, the only thing I could think of is that all those fields and all that barley grass and weed or whatever they're growing, I know those are heavily pesticide sprayed. All I could think of was it whipped up these pesticides and flattened people with it, but it still doesn't make sense, this storm. You know, a lot of people are very suspicious about it.
Well, that is the official story, that it's a it looks like the pollen thing is the official story.
That's right. That's what they're saying.
So that's the one you don't believe.
No. The asthma storm.
You start there, you know. If they're saying it's the problem.
We're saying, were the people of Melbourne tested on with some type of new thing? So, you know, I mean, it's... They definitely brought people to their knees, because I did see some interviews with people. They said it was just horrific. One minute it was okay, and next minute they were, you know, had terrible asthma or, you know, choking symptoms, you know, their chest caving and all that.
Did these seem like real people, or what could it be, like a false flag?
No, definitely. Well, who knows with some of the mainstream stuff, but I don't think so. No, it was too big of an event.
Well, I mean, yeah. they do these things.
No, I don't think
false
it was.
Flags, you know.
I mean,
I wonder if they
extend
the false flag into the disease realm. I know they do that already, but they don't do it quite the same way as they do it these shootings and all that.
Who really knows at the end of the day with anything? But I think the official story of the event is, you know, what they're saying happened. But there's something behind here. But, you know, I don't live in Melbourne, but...
Somebody says it's like 150 bombs going off.
That's right. It's just... Yeah.
Now, that's a little weird. That's a little weird.
That was from the independent sites, you know. A lot of overseas sites picked it up and blew the story up a bit, you know. They didn't know either. But, you know, you're only getting the pollen stuff from the mainstream media here, and they're claiming here that Google News Australia, there isn't a peep about it anymore in the top news articles. You have to really type in and type in the word asthma, so they've sort of taken the stories out, you know. But God knows what happened there. Very strange event indeed, to make people so sick.
Yeah. Well, it is... a great story. But first thing I think of is it's just Melbourne is an industrial industrial area with a high air pollution, you know. So it's something to check in to, you know. I'll be checking into that, see if I can come up with something.
Ryegrass fields.
Oh, ryegrass, right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be looking for stack pollution, you know.
Ryegrass fields, pollen from that, so that's what they're saying.
Why
hasn't that happened before, you know?
They say it happened in December 2016.
Yeah, that's probably it, yeah.
Yeah. So...
it's all sort of forgotten about now, but... they did say on the 60 Minutes show that we're going to get more. So I mean, how do they know?
I mean, this could be another version of the London fog. You remember the London fog?
Yeah.
They said it was a fog that killed people with the flu virus. But it turned out it was really the London smog. The famous London fog. It was really a smog event. It killed like thousands of people, you know.
Oh man, yeah. I've lived in a smoggy city a couple of years, and I had to get out of there. I was getting so sick, and just yeah, hearing other travelers as well starting to cough after a couple of weeks, and myself just having this constant
cough. You know what? I just ran into another one. It looks like there was another thunderstorm asthma that happened in Kuwait.
That's right. Another one's happened after the Australian event.
Actually, about the same time.
Yeah. I think a little bit after.
What happened in Kuwait. So maybe there's something they're making, some garbage they're making worldwide that happens to be really deadly stuff, you know? And it's a really bad air pollution thing.
Yeah.
Now, this thing in Kuwait was called a different kind of thing. It was an asthma rain. They didn't call it a thunderstorm. So in this case, it was an asthma rain. So that this now begins more look like the first thing I said, where the it's the rain, it's not the thunder, that is causing a vertical wind to bring down stack pollution. Really poisonous stack pollution is coming down to ground level, you know.
Well, they're using asthma as a name. They're saying, oh, this asthma storm and all this. But in reality,
right.
What happened is a whole lot of people in that city got made sick quickly by something.
Right.
Yeah, and asthma
right.
is a symptom, you know.
Right.
Shortness of breath, burning throat, burning eyes, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Coughing, can't breathe.
But almost, but in the same general time period, you have that happening in Kuwait also. You know, so it's probably an industrial phenomena. You know, they have these plants all over the world. They happen to be doing something really crazy right now.
That's right. Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Mysterious thunderstorm asthma. Thunderstorm asthma strikes in Kuwait. 5 dead, 844 hospitalized. Then you have the same headline for Melbourne, like a week later, a couple weeks later. That's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Sydney Morning Herald.
As I said, I've got about 25 articles. Yeah. That's
well. But then somebody said they got the Agent Orange diagnosis.
That's right.
And somebody said they got the Agent Orange diagnosis.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They tested positive for it.
Yeah, so that's what it is. They're doing some kind of Agent Orange Orange manufacturing, you know.
Mm.
Or something that gives off. Agent Orange, I think, is a waste product of chemical processing. It's not always an end product, you know?
That's right. Well, they manufactured it here.
They make it there?
They did, yeah. For the Vietnam, they actually sprayed it in Innisfail and on Queensland rainforest as testing.
Right.
I heard they dumped a whole lot of it in Sydney Harbour as well.
Yeah, probably.
They were making it in Sydney, storing it and stocking it. I think New Zealand had something to do with it as well.
Well, these same companies, these chemical companies, they're like inbred with the medical industry. So if they just fuck up, they don't care. The money's going to come back through the medical industry as profit, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
And they're into all the different industries, the legal industry, whatever they fuck up, the money will come back, you know.
I think it's crazy. I had an article put up here by John Rappaport. Great guy, John. I really follow his work, and he puts out short to the point articles. And haven't spoken to him for a while. Try and get him on. I'd like to get him on with us, Jim, but it's the different hard times. But he puts out such great stuff, and they always do very well here. He talks about here's why zombies are real. This was Ohio shocker, 793 million opioid drug doses prescribed in 1 year.
I read that.
The state government of Ohio has filed a lawsuit against five drug companies Johnson & Johnson being one. Oh, that's staggering. Here's the big one. He says 2012, a staggering 793 million doses.
Yeah, but they don't say. I couldn't figure out what the percentage of people who are taking that.
Yeah, that's dose wise, but that's still a staggering, isn't it?
Oh man, it's like truckloads of.
So again, we've got the OxyContin, painkiller stuff here to dull the pain, which is addictive as well. And he says here it's turning minds to mush.
Yeah, a lot of
saying
people,
here Ohio is a pretty much a collective trance state.
With
a lot of people addicted to these things. That's a staggering amount in numbers that we don't really know the exact, as you said. I guess this is used, as the article says here, to treat depression and manage dissatisfaction with life, and drug companies promoting and profiting, making a bonanza for themselves suffering. But there's consequences, as you said before, coming down the line here for taking this stuff. But that's really shocked me, that article. And as he states here, the drug companies pour advertising money like water into television programming. And we had that here with the newspapers run by News Corp, which is heavily controlled by Rupert Murdoch, because you're not allowed to advertise, drug companies are not allowed to advertise in Australia, in the papers and all of that.
That's a good one.
Yes, and so what they've done is, you know how they've been pushing the mandatory vaccination issue, they've done it that way. So that's why there's so many articles pushing vaccines, because they can actually do an article pushing vaccines onto children and people and then mentioning things in there, but they're not actually in the papers allowed to.
To
promote any drug propaganda or anything. You do get the advertisement on TV, but they've found a way around it to be able to write articles pushing drugs or vaccines onto the population and then advertising that way.
And they funnel the money that they would be using in advertising into the legal system in order to get things like a doctor on your children there at school. You know, like you were saying before, the doctors are seeing children up to once a week and prescribing pills without any parental involvement. You know,
well, there's the pushing there because you know. The doctors can get the kids to, but the doctors, the doctors visiting. I mean, kids have all sorts of problems in schools.
Right.
You know, they could be being bullied, or they mightn't be happy at home. Might be just basic things, but obviously, the doctors have a powerful weapon there to convince them into taking the drugs. And as the article says here, John says the effects of the news and the effects of opioid drugs are a marriage made for the ages, you know. With the pharmaceutical pushing and the advertisements and this happening with the doctors, I mean, there's not a lot of way out, especially for kids who don't know how to question this stuff. But you're looking like you're getting states of drugged up zombies here. I mean, not towns or cities, states of people heavily dosed up on this medication. And that's where the zombie thing came. We talked about that before. I mean, if the lights go out, if something happens, we have to go back to the Dark Ages or the Wild West, and people can't get access to their drugs, they're going to turn into zombies.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's because for someone like myself, you know, I mean, I've never taken these pharmaceutical drugs. I never took them as young, you know. I've had hardly any antibiotics, anything. It's not something I go and get. It's never anything I recommend. It's nothing I dish out. I would never give it to my own family. If I don't feel well, I never use it ever. And just to see this amount of, you know, 793 million doses of something like that is a pretty horrible thing.
When I get a symptom, which people call a disease, I see it as an opportunity to track down what's causing that symptom. But
smother the symptom.
Where most people see that as an opportunity to take a pill and try and get rid of the symptom. But
smother the symptoms.
Yeah, if you smother the symptom, you're eliminating the possibility that you will resolve that illness.
Your symptoms surface again. Body's trying.
So they're going to just cover up the information you need to solve that mystery.
Yeah, your body's trying to tell you something, and you're just taking pills to smother over it. But it's an easy, quick way, isn't it? People working so hard, going from morning till night, and just in a rush. It's easier just to whack those in and just completely ignore your body's many cries for help, you know, for whatever it may be. Just smother it.
Yeah, I've tried to talk to people about that, but they usually say, "Well, I don't have time for that. I just take the pill." And I just say, "Yeah, okay, great. You know, I'm going to be witnessing a real tragedy over the next few years, you know."
Yeah, that's right.
It's something I see all the time, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Sadly, you know, there's nothing worse than bad health, you know. It's very painful.
Yes. Yeah, especially for people who get older and suffer like that. It's a terrible way.
Well, any age, I mean, bad health is just the worst, you
it's
know.
Oh my God, I try to avoid that at all. Sometimes I get run down. I don't like it though at all. Yeah, it knocks you out.
Rich people will give away their fortune just to get back to good health, you know.
A lot of people, when they are back in good health, they exploit themselves again, you know. And
well, if they don't know how they got there or how they got out of it, then they fall back into it.
Yeah, you're right. There's nothing worse than being run down and sick and not having good health, you know.
I mean, yeah.
You become a slave to Big Pharma too, you know.
So. Right. If you think that's the way to solve the problem.
A friend told me a few weeks ago that, you know, he's seeing the same thing with our children as well, being what we were talking about with you, with the big heads and the damaged immune system. He said that one of his friends, they have a girl, she's like four years old or something, and she's got terrible arthritis. It's just, and she's really little, and you're seeing all this, people saying this. It's like, oh my God, you know, these poor kids. You see a lot of people giving birth to their children and something going wrong in the first couple of weeks, these vaccines or whatever they are, and then getting stuck in that medical system, and then, you know, 6 months comes and they vaccinated him again, and then they're vaccinating him again at 12 months, and then again, these massive doses on these poor kids, you know. It's absolute assault.
Then they bring in a medical team to handle your child, and then you know you're really screwed. You know?
It's just like some of these parents, they really like it almost in a deranged way. It's like they're always at the doctors and specialists, and they sort of boast about how their child's always seeking medical help and all of this stuff, and it's like, oh my God, don't you have anything better to do? I mean,
yeah, well, it's probably too late for a lot of them, you know.
They seem to love spending their whole life involved with the Big Pharma medical doctor system, you know.
It's that herd instinct, you know. Yes. They're part of a culture.
It's like they're not. Nothing's normal unless they're at the doctor's office every day.
Yeah, I have. When I first ran into that concept of that it's normal to be going to the doctor, and it's almost like something you're proud of. Oh my God, you know, it's just a horrible specter of life. You know,
it's I've said that before. Oh, last time I went to the local medical center, it was maybe something for work. I don't know. It wasn't a medical real thing. It could have been something with my wife she needed. I don't know. I was there for something. And there was so many people in there, you know. And it's every day. It's every day from 7:30 in the morning till 9 at night. It's just completely packed. And I stay clear for years and years. I stay away unless I need to go and need to be there for some reason, which is not really much at all anyway. But I was there for something, and I just couldn't believe the amount of people there waiting, and there was only a couple of doctors on anyway. You know, and they seem to be in the room with the people forever, and then they'd stumble out, and they honestly look like the Walking Dead. These doctors, yeah. You know, with a lab coat on and a clipboard, they look like they were the out of the Walking Dead.
Well, they
just come
they
out
have
of a coffin and you know just sat up out of a coffin and started walking around a medical center. And I was like, I'm going to go in there with that guy and get health advice. Get
him
to treat me. Looks like he's about to keel over and die.
Yeah, well, that's what Mendelsohn says. So Dr. Mendelsohn says that they have the highest rate of suicide as the doctors.
That's right. So. A lot of these doctors are not a good reflection on their own system.
No.
You go and see a naturopath or a herbalist or something like that. Generally, they're very bouncy, healthy people who exercise a lot, and they're very bubbly, and they give you a lot of great information. Generally. I'm not saying it. There's a lot of charlatans and scammers out there as well. I'm just saying in general, good practitioners, naturally, you know, I see a homeopath. One of the ladies I see are probably in her 70s, and she's very pretty. You know, she's got this inner glow, and they're very healthy, and they, these doctors are not, you see them, and you're like, that is not a good reflection for the medical system. He looks like he's about to die.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They probably go out for a smoke at lunch, you know, they don't look very well at all. It's like, you know, I mean, pretty much their whole business is dishing out antibiotics anyway. Now, I mean, they don't even look at you anymore.
I think Abby Hoffman called the Euro-American culture or the death culture, and he spelled culture with a K.
It's almost like culture. That, yeah. Yeah, that's how you... I get a bad feeling in there. I remember being at the hospital with my wife because the hospital had like three floors. It's a public one, but totally free for us. And they had a brand new maternity ward. So it didn't cost us anything. On the day that she, on the night that I took her in, we got our own room with a view and shower and everything. And there wasn't really anyone there. So we had all the midwives and we'd never dealt with any doctors. They don't like dealing with them either. So it was very calm, sort of nice place up there. And I never had to deal with them. But I remember a couple of times that I went in walking past the day surgery area with these kind of old people on the stretchers, you know, their knuckles dragging along the ground, getting taken in for day surgery, you know. They're getting
yippee.
And I was like, oh my God, it gave me the creeps being in the elevator, being in the hospital. Just being in the hospitals gives me the creeps.
Oh well, I'm afraid they're going to rope me in.
I don't like being in there. I just don't.
If you trip and fall, let's say you tripped and fall and went unconscious, they could start diagnosing you and who knows.
It's something they're dealing with now. I was just watching. There's a big local hospital going up now near where I am. It's going to be humongous. But they were talking about some of these new hospitals they're putting up now. How they're changing everything and the look of it, and they showed an architect sort of image of what the hospital's going to look like. It looked like a very, very nice, fancy kind of cocktail airport lounge or something. It did, you know what I mean? And they're trying to change the way the public perceive hospitals, because a lot of hospitals around where I am, they're very broken down, and people don't like the look of them or being in there, and they don't. That's what they're thinking. So they're changing the whole look of it. They've got children play areas and coffee, and they're making it all look really nice and snazzy. And you would not think you're going up to the front desk of a hospital at all. Looks like you're in a hotel.
And those MRI machines and those CAT scanners are going to be so glossy and pretty and shiny.
That's what I'm saying.
They're going to have all these beeping lights on them.
Yeah, it's not just us about the creepy image and getting the creeps in there. They're onto it as well. So, you know, they're going to have a makeover.
They're going to improve the religion.
They're going to improve it.
They're going to bring in Michelangelo to paint the ceiling.
It's really just the devil putting on another mask, you know.
It's a snake.
It's
a snake.
It's a smoke and mirrors.
Molting process.
That's right. There's still that
the latest
behind
high
it,
tech.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, they got the toys here now in Australia. Oh my God, they got the toys indeed. They got their and I think I read an article. It was quite striking. I have to try and find it on Natural News about a surgeon coming out and saying that he admitted that probably more than half. I think it was a lot more than half of just simple day surgeries that they're performing aren't needed. They said they're actually not needed to be done. But he said it's the public that are demanding the day surgeries. And I found that talking with people, they love it. Oh, going in for day surgery tomorrow. See,
We're back into what is the reason for all this horrible medical exploitation. It's largely because people are demanding it, you know?
They're demanding it, yeah. Well, you get a lot of stuff with knee reconstructions. People's knees go and all this, you know. If for a surgeon to come out and say, you know, I will try and dig that up, actually, because I did post it to say this huge percentage aren't, he deemed as not being necessary, but the actual patients getting angry and demanding those surgeries. So they hear
the success of the advertisement, and then they think they want that. You know, it's like as a computer guy, you know, I was always running into these situations where business people will be telling me, well, I want this computer thing done, and I want this program, and I want this, and I'm telling them, look, man, you don't want this stuff. This is a nightmare. You get involved in this, and you're going to have to maintain these programs, and then they're not going to work, and they got to be updated, and it's going to make your life more complicated, you know, and they can't believe it because all this advertisement, you know, makes them think. And then, a smarter computer guy, you know, would just exploit them like a doctor would exploit the patient after the patient sees all these advertisements and all this embedded propaganda, and he's going to go to his doctor demanding that he gets his fair share of that. And the doctor's going, well, sure, I'll take your money, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a funny thing.
That's right.
Well, you know, but it's not all propaganda. You know, a lot of it seems to come out of the soul of people. The illogic that John Rappaport talks about. The people are just irrational. You know,
it's crazy.
You know, it's like the lure of religion or the desire to want a religion. You know, to solve the problem. You know, of life, the common problems. You know. You know, the secret to happiness is to be able to talk about depressing things forever, you know.
Well, I've got another 20 articles to go over, but...
Well, maybe next thing. I got to wake up early in the morning. It's already 1 o'clock here in the morning.
Same. Yeah, I've got to get up at 6.
I'm going to have some kind of illness here, like talk show illness, you know.
Well,
a talk show virus, you know.
We had a New Zealand immunologist, Dr. John Fraser, from the Dean of Auckland's University Facility of Medical and Health Sciences, has likened the anti-vaccination movement to terrorism.
Yeah.
So that's just one story you're getting here. You're getting it in New Zealand because they're pushing the Australian model on New Zealand now, the forced vaccination. So this is a dean of Auckland University's medical health sciences calling us terrorists. So it's getting like that now. And there's all this stuff that I save that I feel it's very important to go over because a lot of people on our side might not find it or get access to it. They might be busy, and I like to bring it up. So that's kind of our method with these podcasts as we get into the weeks, I think. Just keep saving these articles and break them down and go over things we can and get them out to the folks. Because it's pretty incredible. Because this is our bodies, Jim. It's our human bodies. It's our health and our minds. And these are important things going on here.
And people need some good counter-propaganda, and that's what we're going to
Someone's got to do it.
Right.
All right. Well, another good show. Very interesting and mind-opening, and always good to chat with you. And
I'm looking forward to the next one, you know, because I can see we're on a roll here. Got 20 to go.
Absolutely.
20 to go, and by next week you'll have 40.
Oh, there'll be more. I always get that. I just have so many. It's something I'm good at and done over the years so much, just saving links and articles. I can do it quite fast. I always save a lot. I never get to go through them. I try to put the best up onto the website, which I do. So, yeah. And I send you any that...
Great.
Might pique your interest,
I'll try to look at them. Yeah, that for sure. You know,
great. Well, go and have some sleep, and we'll chat again soon.
Okay, I'm looking for the next chat next Saturday night, probably. Right.
I will let you know.
Okay.
I will let you know. I think I have just got to check with Wayne Bush. If you remember, Wayne was on with us.
Yeah, yeah.
So check with Wayne. He's got a presentation to go over, but he usually just talks for 2 hours. I just sit there, so it won't be very productive for us. So I'll just check with him if he's on. He compiles usually about 2 hours worth of research on certain things and goes over it. But we have a lot of listeners who really enjoy it, and he's a very knowledgeable guy. So it's a different way to present that sort of information. So I'll get in contact with him, but I'll let you know there. And all good.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. You're quite welcome just to sit and listen in as well. It's only on Skype. Okay. So yeah. But he usually goes over quite a lot of dense stuff. In that regard, but just with our last podcast, some people were asking about him and enjoyed the show. So he's a great guy. So he should be on next week, but I'll check.
Okay, great.
All right, well, take care, and
you too.
Take care of the body and mind and soul, and
yeah,
chat again soon.
Okay, it's a pleasure. Bye bye.
Okay.